Welcome back, and welcome to our next block. We're at the second day of Divock Push to Talk, and it's going to be chaotic because we've got many guests already. This is going to be an interactive format. We have a large room, and we have our presenters who will be in a minute, we hope. So we've got many participants, and if you want to participate, go to the wiki and to the Divock page, and there's a link to the page. And you will also find a link to the blue button room so that you can join us here. Our topic today is I've got nothing to hide, right? This is something you often hear. Because many people think if you don't do anything bad, no harm should come your way. But we will talk about how the internet knows so much more than we think it does. And we're going to try and make it visible using images for different target groups. And now our presenters are going to introduce themselves. Hi. I'm working at Cyber for Edu, and we want to create images in people's head about the topic we're talking about today. And we are a relatively new association, and I would like to introduce the association to you. Cyber for Edu is an initiative. An initiative that has been founded on the last Congress in Leipzig. And our idea was to repair digital education, and this is what we still want to do. So we're a group of people, nerds, scientists, data protectors, who are closely connected to the Software Foundation, Free Software Foundation Europe. And we're trying to we'll make available information on data protection. And we also have other cooperation partners and technical infrastructure that we can offer. And we also work together with Nextcloud, so that we can provide alternatives to Zoom and other critical apps in terms of data protection. So if you want to get to know us better, you're cordially invited to our talk at 9 in the evening. And you can also find our website on the slide. Well, so what are we going to talk about? I'm sure that you all know the problem. When you get out of the chaos bubble, you often have to explain to people what data protection is about and why we need it. And it's not always easy because you always get these deadbeat arguments like, I've got nothing to hide. And this isn't helpful. What we want to do is talk about it in workshops, in conferences like Big Blue Button. And we want to try and create images. Creating images is a very old tool. We've done it for thousands of years, actually, and we've had a lot of success creating images. And we want to create images that help people visualize topics like data protection and privacy. Because normally you don't often visualize these things. And it is also for education purposes. We have different target audiences, whether it's school children or university students, parents and teachers. So those people who decide what information is made available to children. So it's about the tools we're using, whether it's Microsoft Teams or a big blue button, which is a very important decision. And it's about trying to find ways out of our close-knit community and trying to inform people outside of that bubble. Michael is going to explain the time schedule. And after that, we would like to empty your brains so that we have space for creative imagination. So, Michael. Well, this talk has a rather complex schedule because we are going to get into dialogue with the other participants soon. And sorry, I was distracted. We're going to start working in small groups. So for all participants in the stream, I will give you an introduction on this data protection topic during the workshops in groups. I will do a little presentation that I also often hold at schools, and I've compressed it a little bit, and I'm going to try and give you the highlights in 30 minutes so that we have content for those who are watching the screen at the stream and not working in groups. And then for a little bit of untightening, we have some activities. So let's look at the next slide. I would like to go back because we just became aware that you couldn't see the slides before. And I like them so much that I would still like to present them to you. For those who are on the stream and who are thinking about participating in the workshops, you are warmly invited to join us on Big Blue Button, and the link should be available in the on the wiki under the event. And the same goes for the game which we're going to play. So you're invited to join the Big Blue Button. We've got 25 participants so far, but we've got room for more. So our creative exercise, which we're going to do, it's about refreshing your memory. We're going to give you 4 terms and you have 30 seconds. And we're going to ask you to write your associations with that term in the chat. So there's no good or bad or right or wrong answers. Of course, there's good answers, but there aren't any bad answers. There's just better answers. We're going to try this and see what we end up with in 30 seconds. Maybe we should explain the exact procedure. The idea is that you can look at the public chat on Big Blue Button, and you're all invited to jot down your associations, your ideas on the term. So after that, we will have the term and then your participations. Now it would be wonderful if the chat could be included in the screen. I can't see it at the moment. So for those who are just looking at the stream, I have no idea what you're seeing, but maybe this isn't bad. Now let's start with the first term. Michael, I need your help for a second because I can't see it. Okay, thanks. The first term is in the chat and it's kangaroo. Mark-Uwe Kling, boxing, Australia, funny, jumps, cyber, eggs, pouch, funny, climate change. Several categories. Australia, Australia. Procreation, outback, zoo. I like your participations already. And if you've heard my alarm clocks, the time is out. So, in order to continue, we'll have the next term after the dash. Matrix. The next term is matrix. Red pill, film, green film, chat, error in the matrix, glitch in the matrix, chat protocol, sunglasses, cat, fantasy, neo, maths, code, screensaver. Chat, code, maths. I think that laptops in the future will have a camera behind the screen. Okay, time's out. This has worked perfectly. So there's people who don't like maths, apparently. Okay. Loosen up. Okay, let's continue with the next funny term. Data. Garden. Stealing. My. Austerity. Autobahn. Important. Zero and one. Memory. Reasons. Encryption, files, oil, secure. Lou, interesting associations. And because this was so nice and funny, we've got one last term. So let please make a break in the chat and we'll have the last term. Apple, bite, fruit, cake, pear, yummy, tree, walled garden, iPhone, pear, warm, red, Cake. Sin. Tree. Apple. Thank you to everyone who participated. It's very nice to see so many participants and so many creative and funny answers. Even if it sounds funny, I have to interject for those who are watching us on the stream. We are hearing each other's and the direction, so I've got many voices on my headphones, and we will notify you if we need help. At this point, we would like to continue with the creative phase. We're going to split. We have 8 groups on the topics which you can hopefully see on the slide. I'll read them. Data protection, room 1. Room 2, personal rights. Room 3, open source. Room 4, metadata. Room 5, data security. Room 6, central, decentral. Room 7, big data. Room 8, algorithms. For each room, we have a moderator, a presenter who is going to help you find the rooms. And before we start, we would like to have an estimation of how many people would like to join which room, so that we have a roughly equal number of participants in each room. So, Micha, please go to the public chat and look at the poll. We've made a poll in the chat where you can answer which room you would like to join. So please enter your preference. And if we see that the participation numbers are very unbalanced, we will do a random distribution. But we hope that it distributes equally by itself. So I'm happy to see that people are participating. This is very nice to see. And I hope that the names will be matched with the names in the chat in the poll. So please, in the poll, use your name from the chat. Of course, we don't care about your real name, but please use the name that you use in Big Blue Button for the poll, so that you have the same name and we can assign you correctly. Also, thank you to our assistant team. You're doing a great job. So far, we've got 9 participants. There's a trend already to be seen. Did we set a time limit? No, but we're seeing a clear trend. So there's a big trend. Are you seeing the results? It's very interesting, because we've got nearly all of the participants in groups 1 and 2. There's 1 person for algorithms, but the rest is pretty clearly interested in data protection and personal rights. It wasn't clear to me. Because if you try to explain open source to non-nerds, normally you get answers like, this is this kind of shitty work by nerds that never works. So you see that it's very clear that you still have to explain open source. So we've got 13 participants in the poll so far. That doesn't match with the 38 chat participants. So not everyone has completed the poll yet. So we would like to ask you to complete the poll. Don't be afraid. We've got a very nice team that will guide you. So don't be afraid to join. Nothing bad will happen. And you don't have to present the results in the end. Don't make false promises. I'm not joking. Yeah, I just noticed that you can't see my t-shirt. This is so bad because it's so cool. Thank you for those cool t-shirts, but for the webcam, the logo has to be directly under the neck. Maybe even a face mask. So, what to do? We've got 13 participants, 15 meanwhile. So we're going to give you another minute. On my computer clock, which is the central clock for all activities concerned today. And then I would like to ask all assistants to distribute the participants equally. Because we want everyone to be happy in the end. From youth work, I know that the saying, all children play all games. So if you're interested in the topic we're talking about, you're going to be happy in all of the groups. And Micha is the only person who will remain without group membership. I thought we were talking metadata or something. You'll have to give a presentation, you know that, right? No, my assistant will give the presentation. I used this glove to transport my webcam today. It did a splendid job. All right, so is the minute over yet? Yeah, it's over. We've got 15 participants. So open source is a good topic, but difficult to explain, somebody's saying in the chat. We didn't choose the topics you would have wanted, maybe. But talking about open source, I'm not going to moderate this group, but yeah, I think there's many interesting aspects here. We're not going to talk about it further here, but I have a book recommendation, Anarchy of Hackers by Richard Solman. It's a great book where I learned a lot, even though I thought I knew everything about the topics, and I felt like it was an eye-opener. For us, it seems so normal, but it isn't to be taken for granted. So I would like to leave you about now, but I need a little more help from Moni. Is there anything we have to do now, or will you just assign rooms? Everyone joins the groups on their own. And Ralph is creating the rooms at the moment. So for those who haven't worked with this feature yet, You get a drop-down list of rooms, and the first room you see is not necessarily the room you have been ex assigned to you. So I'm going to read the room names again. Room 1, data protection. Room 2, personal rights. Room 3, open source. Room 4, metadata. Room 5, data security. Room 6, central, decentral. Room 7, big data. Room 8, algorithms. So thank you. I'm going to say goodbye at this point and leave you alone with Michael. so much for metadata and WhatsApp. I would like to emphasize that although I do not like WhatsApp, this isn't primarily a WhatsApp problem. WhatsApp, of course, is a very large system because many people use it, and it can also use data from other apps. And of course, you have to get into a dialogue with the providers of these solutions. Of course, it's important for the app to know other factors than just the name. But you should definitely be careful about which information is shared with the apps that you're using, because you can be sure that they will be monitorized at some point. And there are apps that don't do that. Now, I would like to make a quick excursion on this topic. Of course, it's a large gap between WhatsApp and Facebook. Facebook is secondary in what I want to talk about. The primary information is that somebody gave us their account to analyze, and the point in the middle is the person, male, and they provided us with our account to evaluate. And if you have developer access, you can get information from this account and make this kind of network graph where you can see how the clustering of the profile looks like. The blue dots, if you look at it closely, there's many male participants, and it's actually a football club. And there's just one woman who might be, I don't know, the physical assistant or something like that, but it's almost uniquely male. And then on the right side, we have the colleagues of that person, male dominated. And as you see, it was very easy to isolate the colleague group, and those are family. And in the family of this person, there are more women than men, because obviously women have a larger probability to get older than men. So you see that if you use algorithms on data, you can learn things, and you don't even have to do much to learn those things. So this is also an example which would be possible externally. Because as you see, Facebook has all of this data available to them at all times. And they're using this in order to create advertisement content that is relevant to your interests. And this is how Facebook gains the ability to have a high quality of advertisement placement, because they get all of that information for free from its users. So in this context, we should also talk about this evaluation about likes. A study that is linked below has shown how many likes make up a good picture of a person. So how much does Facebook know about us from likes purely? So on average, you can say that if a person has 10 likes, that means that the system can estimate that person as well as a colleague or as a fellow student. And from 70 likes, Facebook can estimate your personality better than a good friend. From 150 likes, better than your family. And from 300 likes, better than anyone. Ah, we're seeing that the participants are returning from the workshops. All right. Direction is telling me that the group work has finished. I would have had two more slides, but I would do those two slides. Continue. You're free to continue. All right. Then I'm going to continue with two slides. Another interesting topic, or an interesting event, was Cambridge Analytica, who managed quite a long time ago. To give apps to Facebook users, to more than 270 million users. They gave them apps by pretending to have a lottery that you can win or other types of little games which you can play on Facebook. And 270,000 people clicked those links, and a bug on Facebook resulted in the profile data of those 270,000 people being compromised. And it wasn't just those 270,000 people, but also their friends. And in the end, $87 million contacts were forwarded to Cambridge Analytica. So if you compare that to Berlin, this is an entire part of the city, an entire quarter. So if you imagine that one part of Berlin, like one quarter of the city, played the games, all of Germany became compromised. And those people didn't even know probably what they were doing to people on their network. So concluding, I would like to show you a tool which I haven't prepared entirely, obviously. So I would like to show you, this is a Firefox browser in which I've installed a plugin called Lightbeam. And this plugin is able to show me which websites I open in my browser and those and how those websites interact. So I opened a few links. So I'll just click them through and load the content. And I think those are web pages that many German people use every day. And what you see here is two clusters. So that means I've visited seven sites. Freenet, GMX, Web.de, a few German newspapers. So seven websites were opened actively, and the tool shows that passively I've been on 121 third-party websites. And this is because providers use other services. like JavaScript and technical components that is normal and legitimate. But it is interesting that they are linked to each other. Normally, those are providers of advertisement content, and they have two advantages from this. They can provide advertisement, and they also get information and can transport them between the websites. So if I clicked a few links on Freenet or maybe read my mail, I can assume that the content I've viewed are forwarded to T-Online, and the same goes for the newspapers, which are the three nodes over there. So maybe the content I'm looking at in the newspaper is linked to what I read in my emails and vice versa. And you have those little helpers, those little pages that are necessary to provide the website content, but also collect information on us. And it is useful to have an ad filter. Let's see if I can do that spontaneously. So I'll close those. I'll reset the tree. And I hope that I didn't make a mistake and that I will be able to show you the effect of an ad blocker. So let's reload the pages and look at the graph. Okay, it didn't work so well. We reduced the number of third-party sites to 86, but you can definitely say that by using filters, ad filters, I've been able to reduce the number of visited third-party sites. So if you put more work into this and also use different kind of blockers and add-ons, then you can get better results. I forgot to activate NoScript, so just this one little experiment, and then I'm going to free up the stream. So it really hasn't gotten better, so I'll have to practice that again. So I'm done. If you're done, let's go back. I don't know how you felt about it, but the time was very short, so we weren't able to agree on how to continue. So I hope that one group will volunteer. I was in group two, and I would just suggest that group one will start presenting. So please, someone from group one, would you talk about what you did? Hi, that was me. I've been in group one. So if somebody from group one wants to join discussion, you're welcome to. So we were talking about what data protection means and what problems we're facing with it. So on one hand, it became clear that data protection is important, but sometimes irritating, because you have to make a lot of effort in order to be able to use content from large content providers. So there's many laws and regulations you have to understand and stay ahead of. And also, if I work in a company, often you don't know what kind of metadata you produce. And sometimes you leave information you're not conscious of. So for example, if I call a friend from work, that means that they could get the information. Or for example, if I have a time tracking software and I track how many conversations with customers I have had that day, sometimes I take longer when solving a problem, and then I'll be getting in trouble because I've had less customers than I should have had maybe. So this kind of meta information can be compromising and can get you in a bad spot. So if you have an email address at a provider and then suddenly you have a data loss and data get publicized because we've had those data leaks. Maybe they didn't want to publish the data, but then information is available about me, for example, about who I called. So it is very important to stay ahead and be conscious of what data and what metadata you leave on your journey through the internet. And it is also important to protect other people because metadata is just, it's not about just me, but also about other people. That's it. Sorry, I just put myself on mute. Thank you. Then group two. Anyone who wants to present what we did in group two, just go ahead and talk. No? I can do it. All right. Thank you. The idea we were talking about was, why is it okay that sometimes I grant permission to my data and sometimes I'm adamant on keeping them private? For example, I don't want to use Microsoft Teams, and we relatively quickly agreed on like the picture of a traffic light. Sometimes it makes sense to just have a red light. For example, if you're a teacher who's going on a field trip with their students, of course they're going to stop at every red light, even if there's no car in sight. And the same person might behave very differently if there's no children around. So normally you can estimate if a car will come or not. But it's more difficult if you're 15 years old and going on Facebook or Twitter and sharing content which might be very embarrassing a few years later. And if I'm a four-year-old, if I have a four-year-old with me, of course I'll hold on tight to its hand because a four-year-old is not able to estimate the danger. And of course, if I see that there's a speed trap, I'll stop at the red light. And of course, this makes a difference because you behave differently if you're on camera. So, what I understand from this, explaining to a child why people behave differently at traffic lights. Why do teachers always stop at traffic lights or police officers? And why do random people often ignore red traffic lights? This is something you have to explain to children because it does make a difference. This you have to explain this to kids. So thank you for taking over. Now I would like to continue with group three. Two things. We didn't talk about this. We will further develop this, and you're free to join us on cyber4edu.org at 9 in the evening, and we will continue our discussions. Then we saw in the polls, if you say that we can't have a real result because we were so few people in the group, you can say this and it's okay. Then I would like to continue with group three, open source. Hi. We were four people in the group. We had one presenter and three normal participants, and we were talking about open source. So we started with brainstorming, which you probably all did. And we thought about what does open source mean to us. And we had many terms or words that were said, data sovereignty. I don't want to name all the keywords, but for example, we talked about how effective is open source software. And then we had one term which led us to another topic, which was help in the household. And we would like to join up the presentations. Paul, do you know how we continue? Well, we were talking about household help because you have many apps that have different purposes. And we had the idea that if you have a ho help in the household or a mechanic, you are very careful about giving out your key, for example, or leaving them alone in your apartment. So, how do you decide who you leave your house key to? And why is it different in terms of our personal data, in terms of the data we have on our smartphones? So the idea would be that leaving your personal data open to app providers would be like leaving your house key to a household help. Yeah, because they do use a lot of our personal data and our personal space. Of course, our mobile phones have become personal spaces. Okay, we continued the image and we concluded that, As Paul said, it's about trust. And if you have a help in the household, you have trust, or if you know the mechanic that you're employing, you have trust. And in the end, we had the image of a village where everyone knows everyone, and we help each other out all the time. And the open source community also tries to establish this kind of trust which you have within a community. And in the end, we had this little village analogy. And this was almost before time was up. So yeah, that was the image we concluded with, a village as a trusted community. Yeah, that's it. This sounds very interesting and good. When I was doing youth work and people told me, what do I care about NSA or stuff? I asked them, if you don't care about that, would you give your parents access to your WhatsApp? And of course they said, oh no, no, I wouldn't, never. So why would you give the NSA access to that data? All right, thank you. And thank you for your brilliant ideas which you brought into this talk. Metadata didn't take place, but data security did. So who would like to present? Hi. We were a relatively small group, and at first we thought about the image of a safe, but then we decided against it because it's a relatively too easy for a relatively complex issue. So we decided in favor of this picture, which is a house. And the idea was, when the house is being built, while it's being built, you don't have a say in how it's built. Imagine your parents are building the house, and you as a child, you don't have a say in how the house is built. And later, when you get older, you have options like, for example, installing a curtain or blinds. And the same goes for the internet. Looking at the internet is like looking out of your window. And you can also decide in favor of putting down the blinds or pulling a curtain or having a semi-transparent curtain, maybe. Just another aspect was security. If you start building the house, you have a naked foundation, and the first thing you usually build as soon as you have the walls is doors and windows, which doesn't really match with how we do data security. But we couldn't add encryption into this image. I'm just imagining two houses, one conventional house with doors and windows and all that, and one unconventional house with no windows, no curtains, or just open wall, where you would ask yourself, why would you have that kind of house? But you would open your door, right? You want a house without doors and windows? No, but I want my door to be able to be closed and secured. Yeah. So the analogy would be, would you like to have a house without windows or doors? So do you want to continue using Facebook, for example? Or would you go the Matrix way? I think this would be worth additional discussion. because it's a nice image. Thank you. This would also fit with the image of the household help. So this is all coming together, which is great. Thank you. Let's continue with central decentral. Who would like to present? There were no participants, unfortunately, because obviously the topic was chosen very complex. And maybe we can talk about the aspect in the overall picture. All right. Moving on to big data. Yeah. We were a small group, but I think we have a nice result. So we talked about what is big data and what kind of image could you use. And an image that is often used in the upload filter debate. You have many pictures that are being used and those, they are fascinating. So as the next point of discussion, we had this. So what is a big data pool? This is private insurance, like a company that gauges what your credibility is like. So if you combine this with data, I think we were discussing on, so this would lead to dystopia. Sorry, I didn't quite understand what he was saying. So we had other topics that were mentioned. We have large containers of data, large pools of data like Facebook or Google, and then we have open source tools that rely on the community in order to be built up. So big data, we have data that are not easy to be linked, and then we have technological possibilities to combine images. And we agreed on the image of a tattoo, because you have a tattoo for a lifetime, and the more you participate in online forums or in online media, the bigger the tattoo gets. Because it creates a bigger image of who you are to the World Wide Web. And if this tattoo is combined with health data, for example, or private data or problems, you should really think about whether you want this kind of tattoo. Because if you say, I've got nothing to hide, and I'm not interested in what's going to happen in 20 years. The tattoo is a fitting image, because many people are actually ashamed of tattoos they've gotten 20 years ago. And you can't do a laser therapy for a big data tattoo. So it's a permanent branding. I'm just imagining a body full of Facebook and Twitter icons. And this is all linked to information like your social security number. This is getting really interesting. So you're kind of tattooing data about yourself on your body. So maybe what is written on your body isn't even true. So before you get your tattoo, you should really think about what do you want tattooed. Because if I go, when I go out now and decide on a tattoo, I can actually decide on which image. But with Facebook, actually, I can't always decide. So those would be those drunk tattoos. I think not everyone who has a tattoo really chose their tattoo. So you should be really be aware of who brands you. So let's get to the last topic, algorithms. Did we have a group on algorithms? Yeah, we do. And we made a nice image. But yeah, here we have it. Now, I think this will look quite confusing and I'll have to explain it. I like it. I get it as a tattoo. So, I think there could be worse tattoos, but maybe I would have it designed professionally. Well, you can't choose it. So, our thought was that algorithms are very abstract as a concept. So most people don't understand what an algorithm is and what the ramifications are for our everyday life. So we thought about how to visualize what an algorithm does, because a computer doesn't really see or understand us as a human person. So we are essentially passed through a number of wheels, which you see here. A person comes in at the beginning and then it's taken apart by the wheels and separated into little chunks. And then those chunks are built back together. But whatever is parsed together from the pieces of information about us doesn't represent us, doesn't represent what went in on the other side. So we have a corrupted image of ourselves in the end. So it should be important to us how we are represented by algorithms and how algorithms see us, and if that is the way we want to be seen. And to, well, this image is a bit brutal, but this is also what we wanted to show because algorithms can be brutal. They can rip our lives apart and press it into some kind of cookie cutter shape. So algorithms learn, but they don't learn like in a soft kind of way, but they actually like sharpen their knives and sharpen their gears in order to crush and separate us more precisely. Wow. This is a very complex image, so it's definitely a secondary school. I love it. It's great. Thank you. It's not an easy task to say thank you. Now, you've seen me most of the time during this talk, but this would be a false representation because many people have participated in preparing this talk and the activities, and I hope that I don't forget anyone. So we've had many background helpers, which I've just named, who helped prepare this workshop. So we are pretty good on time. So, Micha, if you would like to add anything, you can use the rest of the time to do that. Okay. I would be happy if there's questions. And also, maybe we could have a final statement from the participants in the chat. How did you like this activity and the talk? Could we do differently next time? We would be very interested in that. This has been a big experiment from our side. Now we had the question if maybe more people would like to get on camera to make a little bit more real. Just as an idea. Questions and answers and then feedback. Hi, we've got the first camera image. So, are there any questions, comments? Just open the mic and speak. We have a question from the chat. How do we develop these ideas further? You can visit our website and we will develop these ideas further. It's cyber4edu.org. So for those on the stream, yeah, just one thing. If you don't know the whiteboard thing we have here, it's a killer feature because you can actually people can paint on the presentation on the slide. This can be very interesting. So before I pass the mic to the Herald, I would like to announce the last chance for questions. So from my side, I had a lot of fun today. It was stress, of course. I think everyone had a little bit of stress in their own form. And I think that anyone would agree that we should do that again. These kind of decentral big blue button formats are very interesting. We've never had this kind of interactive workshop remotely. Maybe a fun fact would be we only had the idea of me giving the talk as a filler, like the day before yesterday. Because we didn't want an empty stream, or the Orga team didn't want an empty stream and asked us to fill it. So this did add some stress, but in the end, I think we did something good. And we all had fun. Now, we're having a nice participative image in the slide. Okay. Then thank you from our side. And now we're going to pass the mic to the Herald. Back to the studio. Oh, what did I always say? No questions, comments from the audience? Okay, too bad. Herald? Bring forth the Herald. I would like to activate my camera, but I can be a replacement Herald. I've got the replacement Herald here. Hi, I'm the Herald. You have to find the button. Just a second. Yeah. Splendid. I'm impressed. I've never seen that many speakers and participants and everything. This is really impressive, and thank you for your participations. This has been really interesting as an experiment, and I think it's the most decentral and chaotic event we've had this weekend so far. I think it was very fascinating, the kind of results we had, and I hope that in your groups and in your workshop discussions, you had a lot of fun. And I love this kind of participative result. So, and I also liked your presentation, even though it was just meant as a filler. It was a very good way to do this. And then just last words, close your windows, close your doors, and be careful who you let into your house. Just one last question. Is there anything you can do to support Caius at school? So this is your advertisement space. Yes. Caius at school has got a website. Just Google Chaos macht Schule, and you will find links to the regional hubs all over Germany. It's not just Berlin, but we also have other groups. Just search for us on the web and you'll find us. It's a little bit difficult at the moment because of Corona and schools are closed and all that, but it's going to get better. And we're also working on offering other formats. So you're very welcome to participate and help us. The same goes for Cyber for Edu, which has a bit of a broader foundation. You're very much welcome to participate. And maybe we can also help you find other groups where you could give valuable input. There's also groups that are more focused on hardware, ones that are focused on software. For example, we have EduLabs, where we have a meetup next week as well. And we're talking about OER, for example. And maybe we'll meet again at one of those places. Maybe you can participate and meet other people who are participating. Because who will do it if we don't do it? Imagine people are watching right now, but they don't know how they could participate. So what would be a typical way to participate? I would say there's no fashion in which you wouldn't be able to help. Oh, make it specific. Well, as a lawyer, I do my part. We've got teachers. We've got people who write and proofread texts. We've also got parents who participate with their view as parents. Students would also be welcome to participate. So I don't think there's a way in which would be completely useless to us. Anything is helpful. We've got different working groups in different areas. So, and those are going to get bigger rather than smaller. Students is an interesting idea because this would be a very interesting angle of view to you. Because as adults, we tend to think that we know all the answers and know what we should teach students, but this view can be very different from the student's point of view. So chaos at school shouldn't just be from adults for students, but also should include the feedback from students. And just one little thing you were talking about online learning and that personal visits at schools are impossible at the moment. So is there anything you need at the moment? Well, in Berlin, we're actually facing the challenge of organizing schools. We're using video conference formats like Big Blue Button. So one challenge is support for users, because we've noticed that technology isn't the only aspect that is important, but it's also important to support participants personally. So support and materials, visualizing diagrams, anything you can hand to people would be helpful in order to make it more graspable and to use it really at school, because just setting the frame isn't the final solution. And maybe there could also be new or crazy ideas that would be helpful, because this, for example, has been an experiment right now. And it would be boring if we just continued the way we did always. So we have a broad set of challenges that we're facing right now. So your participation is always welcome, whatever it looks like. So you can see it as kind of a playground to test new ideas and aspects. Yeah, absolutely. Because there's many schools and teachers who are willing to participate, and it's always possible to find classes or teachers who would like to try out new things. So we do have a playground of sorts. Our vision is to be able to say Corona has been a catastrophe on the human scale, but in terms of education, we did learn and we did find new ways of offering education. So what we have right now is not just a crisis, but an opportunity to find new ways and possibilities. What a nice conclusion. So thank you to all participants. Thank you to our instructors and presenters. You did a great job. And remember, close the windows, take your belongings with you, don't smoke in a classroom. Well, have a wonderful evening. Now we'll have a short break, and in the next block we will talk about Kritis and the experience of an activist. You'll see. It's going to be fascinating and interesting, because there has been a convo already which he initiated, and it was very fascinating. So have a nice evening. Thank you. Bye. Thank you for listening to our translation. It was provided to you by She's a Pirate and Flow H.